Good morning. This is our Friday conversation with Kurt Walzer and Cheryl Spaulding for Joseph's People. And today we're going to talk about an issue that I don't understand, the fact that people get advice and then they just don't do anything with it, nothing at all. They walk away shaking their heads, and the person that gave them the advice feels really good. And we're not just talking about 2 seconds worth of advice here. I mean, they may spend an hour or even work with them for several sessions, volunteers who are in the business of helping people, career-type people. And they'll spend time, and then when they ask them, have you done these things, they haven't. Now, they've run into the very same thing in Platforms to Employment. You know, they've got 6 weeks of stuff going there, and then they get to the end, and they're supposed to go out and talk to employers, they're supposed to do certain things, and then they report in what I talked to, and a fair number of them never do it, even after psych counseling, financial counseling, all. So clearly there's an issue that I don't understand, and clearly it's an issue that even Platform to Employment doesn't understand, because my natural reaction to it is clearly if somebody who is in the business of employment gives you really great advice, why wouldn't you hop on it? And the reverse reaction, why wouldn't you just jump on it and take it and run? And they don't. So why? Thoughts on that? Why isn't that happening?
When we run into that was when welfare to work, the workers were reporting. They talked to the person, had a plan, they had no transportation, all said, well, that looks pretty guaranteed in those days there were a lot of work. And then the workers would show up at the doorstep at 3 times, and there was nobody home, no one opened the door. So that was a great hassle. There was a lot of investment of planning it, advising it, the person agreed to it, and then when it came to actually doing something about it, there was no person wasn't there emotionally, physically. Then, of course, for the helper, you know, that's kind of a logic plan. You know, you get from A to B, and the same thing as you described. And the people seem to be present and they seem to agree that's what I want. And then, of course, they approach us because we are more into what happened to the person inside with their mind. So, of course, they suggested, why don't you talk to somebody? There is a problem. Well, they wouldn't even show up for that. And then, of course, they lost benefits and then it gets worse.
And that happens in Joseph. We've had people. The one woman I'm talking about, she's about to go homeless.
Yeah.
But she's not doing...
So then I, as a counselor, I used to worry, oh my gosh, homeless, because I couldn't tolerate being homeless and all this. I would start to get anxious and worried and think of the person at home at night. And then finally I had to talk to myself, well, whose problem is it? How come what I feel doesn't happen in that person? So I then decided if they still see you, I asked them, why didn't you tell me a little bit? And then, of course, first, they never asked themselves the question. The first answer is, I don't know, I never thought of it. Or then I questioned, well, is their brain functioning? So then I asked, how is your drinking and your medication? Of course, if persons have been using marijuana for years and years or have been drinking, it affects the functioning of the brain. But often they don't even report that accurately. And when I got training in drug and alcohol, don't believe them what they say. And if it says, well, I have a couple of drinks now and then, for me a couple is two, you even have to define what a couple is.
Okay, for an alcoholic, a couple might be 20.
Yeah, so...
Okay, all right.
So then I also didn't take that as an answer, I don't know. I said, that's just an old... Well, it started as a teenager. That's very common. If you ask a teenager, I don't know. It's,
and they really mean it. I don't know.
No, it's a beautiful way to escape. Because if you really... I said, yes, you know. Do you really want to know? Because you're the owner of what's happening.
Do you think it is worthwhile for for people who are working with people, you know, like myself, or people in Josephine, or people in platform, whatever, to confront that issue with them?
Well, you could say if they come again and say...
And they do come.
They come again and says, well, here we are again. Mm-hmm. It looks like what I suggested in the plan, you were not doing it. Can you tell me why? Tell me a little bit what's your thinking. Well, if you have a little bit trust and if you're not too angry at them, if you're angry,
that's
they're not going to tell
yeah.
you.
Right.
Because those are learned behaviors way, way back. Because you grow up and you are rewarded telling truth, you just continue. But if you tell the truth and then you get punished, why tell the person the truth?
Yeah. Hide it.
Yeah, you want to escape.
Like a kid.
You want to escape.
Yeah. Did you do that? No.
And then, and then sometimes they haven't thought about it. And then it gets into, well, would you like to try it? I once talked to a woman who couldn't drive over a bridge.
Really?
Yeah, even those, thousands of people.
Okay.
And then intellectually, she said, yeah, I can drive. But as soon as she came to the, her anxiety went so way up.
She couldn't go over the bridge. Wow.
That she couldn't think straight anymore.
Okay.
So something is going on in that person which they are stuck in. Well, she says, I don't really have to go over bridges. If someone else drives, she could.
Okay.
So she just doesn't go to the shore. And if she wants to go to the shore,
take somebody with her who can drive over the bridge.
Someone else drive her there.
Okay.
And she says, I can live with that. So, depending then what's the price a person pays for that. And sometimes the price of going homeless seems to be rather high.
You and I would certainly think so.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, well, then you got to go homeless and let the person become homeless. And then, of course, something gets stirred up. And, of course, they think it will not happen. And someone will feel the anxiety of a person in middle class or whatever background is homeless. And I used to tell people to drive by the homeless shelter.
Do you really want to be there?
I can't imagine going there. Well, then, there's no rescue.
Your insight is interesting because I would say that most of us who work with the people, this population of people, kind of assume that in Platform to Employment, the assumption is if you signed up and came to this 6-week program,
You're serious, A,
and you've taken the step. But that doesn't mean, what you're saying is, that doesn't mean that they've bought into every part of the steps that are required within that program, that they've actually accepted that this is what I have to do each part of the way along, and that I acknowledge each section. I've acknowledged it's important to me.
Yeah, so if they are committed to showing up, then the person who worked with this, they just ask the questions, well, are you aware you're not doing it? And then the person says, yes.
Without being accusatory.
Yeah, without being accusatory, because they know they're not doing it. It says, well, can you tell me what you're struggling with? To me, as a helper, I can do it. I'm so logical, and I can see why can't you hop from one A to B.
Right.
And sometimes they can tell you secrets over trauma they had in school. And all kinds of stuff comes up, which they have never told anybody. So we just don't know, but the person has the key to that secret.
And they're the only one who does.
Yeah, if their brain is functioning.
Right.
But usually it functions because they still can pay the bills, or they can drive a car, or they can do something. I mean, if they're really in bad shape, they don't...
They do any of those things.
Well, then you get into mental illness because they feel they're somebody else, and they don't know the time. And the
no,
those,
most of the people that we're talking about, they function well within the world.
Yeah, but there is something which finally catching up.
Well, that's an interesting insight, because even in Joseph's people, we'll have people, and I've certainly had people that I work with, and they said, well, this is what you should do, and whatever, and then they don't do it.
Yeah.
My reaction to that is, I'm mystified at first.
Yeah, so...
And then I'm angry.
We talked once before, because I, as a counselor, I learned a lot from people, because I can show no result. I've seen people 10 times,
Nothing happened.
Nothing happened. So therefore, if you have statistics, say the funder will say, you're seeing all these people, can you prove that they're changing? So with the welfare at the work people, our change rate was very, very low. So the government said, this is a waste of effort. So then we changed it. If a person changes a little bit of thinking, they could see themselves in a workplace, but they're not there yet. There's a change in the way you think. You know, there's a saying that the way man thinks is so he is, kind of.
Well, it's something that my husband and I talked about. We have what we call a low capacity for pain. If something is painful, we change it. It's the thing that has driven us in our careers. Jim and I have talked about this before. I just don't have a lot of big capacity for pain. If I'm doing something and it's painful, I change it or move on.
Well, you see, that's good because you change it, but then there is also pain avoided.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I still remember, which was such a positive to me, a kid refused to go to school, what they call in those days school of phobia, school avoidance.
Okay.
He could do the work.
Okay.
And it drove his mother crazy, single parent. So I got to talk to the kid, and we talked about it, and, you know, and then he would say, yeah, I promise I go next morning. You know, all planned, the school was waiting, and all this.
And no kid.
No kid. And then the minister was also involved, because he came from a family, high stress, the father was absent. So he had the same concern, so he says, okay, he and I drive early morning to the house, see how flexible family service was.
In those days?
So he and I both are there 7:30 a.m.
Wow.
The teenager up.
Wow.
He says, okay, get in the car. So he comes out and runs across the lawn in the neighborhood.
Oh, no.
The minister and I looked at each other and said, well, are we going to run after him? So again, that was a logical plan, but something, you know, so he couldn't. So then, of course, parent gets fined if this kid can't
get the kid,
So we had to be evaluated when he has a serious problem.
Right.
So we got her off the hook, and then eventually I took him to school up in northern Pennsylvania to a residential boarding school associated with the Lutheran Church. He actually came with me.
Okay.
So we saw the places, how it would look like. And after that, he went to school.
Up there?
The public school.
He went back to
regular
school.
Because the idea of physically experiencing this strange place away from home is worse than attending school.
The alternative.
And of course now, obviously, this anxiety was high, and I guess in those days he didn't have the medications. And, but again, that pain was worse than going to school. So sometimes it has to get worse.
In order to get
like
better.
The pain. I mean, we talked about when pain is a motivator, our body is very clear. There's a pain and it tells us, pay attention, there's something hurt.
Right.
The emotional pain inside, pay attention, what is hurting here? And then there is, you know, we are creative to see if you fix it. Or we don't even look at the pain because you don't even want to feel it.
Avoid the pain completely.
That's like that boy was avoiding. He didn't even want to think about it. Because if you think about it, you have to pay attention and focus, and then you feel it.
See, that's the part that I find hard to get my arms around.
You see, that's why you and I, who are problem solvers, have the, it's working, you know, have that analytical assessment. And problem solving, you feel the pain, you see it, you think about it, and you take action. That's that cycle.
Right.
Feeling, awareness, reflection on it, and then take action.
To end it.
And you always need the three continuously. Mm-hmm. You have these three cycles, three areas function. You function well. But usually some people just feel and act. That's the impulsive. And then some people just feel and think and they never act. And so, you know, if you have all three functioning, you usually can figure things out and learn. And something is disturbed there. And
the other observation I had in that conversation yesterday with Joe was he finds it remarkable, because he's spoken at a number of groups now, so he finds it remarkable that the level of the people that we're working with is so high. And then, of course, he asks the question. He can't understand why they're unemployed. And I've certainly seen that and heard that question many, many, many times over many, many, many years. And there's something going on. The question is losing their job? I mean, kind of what you're alluding to, that the loss of the job has triggered something previously within their life that now has become a barrier.
What I found, again, each person is different, is someone had a good job, had a high status, was valued, respected, and then suddenly is laid off, and they kind of feel injured and hurt, and they can't visualize themselves just taking a regular job, which is beneath their capability. And their identity is tied up with their job and making the money. And it's an element of pride, in a way. Some pride is good, and then the pride at the wrong time.
It can hurt you.
It really hurt you.
Yeah.
And I remember I trained a guy. He was actually homeless. He had some college education, just working at a supermarket. And they said, yeah, we have a job, minimum wage, just stocking the shelves.
Right.
His intelligence, his education, he could actually run the store.
Right.
I had to tell him, I just call him now, Joe. Joe, keep your mouth shut. You are hired there to stock shelves, nothing else.
Right.
You're not asked to think and tell your superiors how they could do the job. And every day, I saw him about two times a week. I said, can you still remember to keep your mouth shut? You're there just to make the dollars. He had some pension from the army. And that was, you know, he was already in the 50s, you know, and so to change a new habit, to keep his mouth shut, he actually succeeded and had enough money. His dream was to move to South Carolina. It was cheaper.
Right. And there are stock shelf stockers in South Carolina for sure.
So again, that has nothing to do with you. You are there just to make those dollars. Again, the ability to partialize. So they're all internal skills, which, of course, the older we are, the harder it is to do it. But it's not true. You can't teach an old dog. There's usually a saying.
But
it is a little bit harder. But, you know, brain research shows now that brain is pliable until we die.
Is there something people can do to test themselves, whether their decisions are good or bad? I mean, is there something they can do?
I don't know what they think. As I say, you and I talked about the recorder, because it's good if you have some feedback, because we can delude ourselves so easily of what reality is. And sometimes they have to check it out. Let's say if that person is kind of always by themselves, they're not hired, they can believe that this is the reason and are convinced about it, or some conspiracy or whatever, and then you ask them, how did you check this out,
Yeah, you get no. Yeah,
and
exactly.
And then if they, let's say you were a job coach of somebody, they're allowed to be a partner for a while, that person becomes a witness. I used to tell people, I'm the lawyer of your better self, because you're not the good lawyer of your better self.
That's a good line. Because, I like that. I mean,
I become part of the now history we write, and then how we analyze what happens, these experiences, you know, is something so apart. And so people make erroneous evaluations and judgments.
Healthy or unhealthy, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if they're healthy, we usually consider that you succeed. And
yeah, the successful and the unsuccessful both make erroneous decisions.
And if I always tell that story, I used to belong to a swim club, so there was one way in and one way out. It's kind of a, it wasn't a two-way street. So I was driving into the swim class, and suddenly I saw one car coming the opposite direction. I said, oh, this crazy woman or man, he's in the wrong direction. Second car, wow, so many naughty people. After the fourth car, I thought to myself, well, it might be me.
And it was.
Well, it was
it
me.
It was.
So I would say things happen to you several times.
Yeah.
Give yourself the benefit of a doubt.
That maybe you were the problem.
So that was an excellent.
Yeah, I like that.
The lesson is don't be hasty toward judgment.
So you weren't...
I guess you always have to give yourself a benefit of the doubt and also the other reality and always say, always be open. And of course, if I'm so right all the time, I learn nothing because I'm right and the whole world is crazy. Or the other way is I'm such a no good person and everybody else is right. So that's, you know, having that balance.
Thank you, Kurt.